Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to a Patreon exclusive of The Downside. We're a little bit late reviewing this, but not that late. We're recording these closer to release, yeah. So it can be topical. I just forced Russell to watch Joe Coy's opening monologue at the Golden Globes. What's your review?
Well, you know, it's the first time I've ever watched Joe Coy at all. Mm-hmm. I knew the name.
Uh-huh.
I recognize the name, but I wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup.
Just because he's Asian, or any other reason?
No, I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about him. I think it was one of those comics that, you know, you see that they have Netflix specials.
Yeah.
But you're like, I haven't seen any clips of this. I haven't heard of him.
And you're like, oh, he sold at Madison Square Garden 6 times. How do I not know? It just shows it's the fractured nature of the world.
Totally.
Uh huh.
So this is my first time watching him.
Many people watching that last night.
I gotta say, I don't know. I don't know if I'm seeking out anything else.
It is Joe so Coy. Fucking bad.
It's really
bad. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It's so bad that it makes me mad.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's the same way where, like, originally, look, it's not that I have any sway, but I was like, oh, I'm not gonna speak shit about Matt Rife publicly, but then he becomes like the face of my literal art form.
Yeah.
He becomes the person everyone asks about.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I think stand-up comics really kind of went after him after the show because there's a degree of like, you made our profession look like we suck. You look like stand-up sucks. And when people go, I hate stand-up comedy, how can you blame them based on that?
Yeah.
And he does, this is a guy who performs all the time.
Yeah.
And he hits like every no, every like basic don't do this on stage.
Yes.
It's not going to help. He comes out first. He tries to be like super like, this was my dream. Your dream was the Golden Globes. Stop with this. This was not everyone's dream.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's a nightmare job to have to tell those jokes in that weird room with
the most
famous people in the world.
Celebrities
right
are weird, but people have done it. I think you have to strike this real balance of like, are you going to go there and be an asshole? Everyone's like having their night. This isn't just them getting their awards. They get to see their friends. They're all on movie sets all day. They're working.
Yeah.
They're probably obsessive workers. This is their night to get drunk and have fun.
Yeah.
So you have to strike this balance of like kind of mean enough to be funny.
Yeah.
But don't ruin anyone's night.
I feel like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did a pretty good job.
Brilliant.
Of doing that. I do the very first year Ricky Gervais did it, I did love the kind of thing of like not towing the line fully and just kind of being mean to these people.
Yes.
Because I do think there is a fun, like, almost White House correspondence nature of, like,
totally.
This is the only time this kind of person could make fun of these people, and they're all trapped there.
Yes.
And they have to have it. And they are kind of ruling the world a little bit. In a certain way. And so it is fun to see someone be like, hey, you have to sit here, and we're all going to laugh about you and your like things, and you know you're all like for years propped up people like Harvey, you know, Weinstein and blah blah blah. So I can get on board with that. But this whatever, there was not even an attempt at like he wasn't being mean. It was nothing like
no, he wasn't mean, and he was so desperate. I think this is like first of all, this is a perfect example of like Joe Coy. I don't know a lot about Joe Coy. I've seen enough specials, but I imagine based on what I see of the stand-up career, it's like he has a huge following, he sells at big arenas, mm-hmm. and it shows like this are an opportunity to really enter just a whole different section of Hollywood to like have a movie career.
Yeah.
I mean, all the directors are there. And so this is a big deal. This is him going in front of an audience that isn't all just stand-up fans, and maybe he becomes a name.
Do you think he has meetings lining up?
I'm sure this is considered a disaster.
Yeah.
So he goes up there and he like, you can tell he wants to be liked. You can
so
feel
badly,
it.
Yeah.
You can feel it. And he does so much like, I can't believe Robert De Niro's there. It's like, dude, act like you belong here.
Yeah.
And he blames the writers like within
so many
3
times.
Minutes.
So many times.
And he
times.
Starts doing like a thing where he goes like, the ones you laughed at, that was me. And I think he's probably trying to be like jokey. Like,
yeah.
No, that one was me. But it comes off just like, pathetic.
No one's laughing fully at any of them.
No one's laughing fully at any of it.
There's some sympathy laughs. You know, there's some sympathy things, but then there's like full bomb moments too.
Full bomb. Mike Lawrence, he's a big roaster. He like was the champion of roasters. He's like a comedic writer and stand-up comedian. He said, I just saw now, he was like, he didn't establish like who he was.
Yeah.
Like Ricky Gervais, I mean, you get the benefit of being famous. Ricky Gervais is like, they know who he is.
Yes.
And he's there and he's got his beer. But like, if you don't, you got to set up your character.
Who you are, what your thing is.
And for him, his character is just like, I can't believe I'm here. A mean little jab, and no one really knows who he is. Like, establish if you are, no one knows who I am. Establish that with a good joke, and then move on.
And then the classic awful stand up thing of like, even when they were laughing, and then being like, what, blah 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 blah, like acting like that they were offended, and they weren't. No, like they weren't offended. Maybe they didn't laugh as hard, but they did get a reaction. And then you're consistently going back and being like, what? No, that and like defensively. And you don't need it. It's not like, but you're just doing that to then say the punchline again or something.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, it's like, it's almost as if like not appreciating the medium of hosting, which I think is more tightly written, where he would have a joke. It would sometimes do fine.
Yeah.
Listen, that audience was not like the worst audience. They were given it.
No, they were resetting. Very generous for how bad it was.
But he would say a punchline. At first, he wouldn't really hit it. I feel like he kind of like would sometimes swallow it.
Yeah.
And then he would like add tags that were not written of just like, yeah, you know, it's Meryl Streep. You know, blah, blah, blah. And so he adds this like extra
repeating.
Dead air. And it peters out every time.
Yeah.
And then he would like shy away from the punchline. Part of being doing jokes is you got to tell the joke.
Yeah.
You can't tell, set a punchline, and then like, well, let me try to make it more naturalistic. Because it's not. This is not natural.
No.
And then the worst is mine is just the the laughing.
Yeah.
There's a thing of when you're bombing, you're like, well, let me make up for the laughs by providing them myself.
Yeah.
And it never works. And I know the impulse.
I know it.
Yeah. I know the impulse. If you watch our live show that we're recording with Emily Wilson today, you will see us doing the same thing. We do it. We all do it to a degree. But what's amazing is this guy is like, he's been a stand-up comedian for forever. And he just shits the bed.
Also, okay.
He says I only had 10 days to prepare
for this.
It's
a long time.
Fuck off, dude.
It's a long time.
If you gave me 10 days, I would A, I'd spend
and
all
resources.
My money. Resources. And if I didn't get them, I'd spend, he's got more money than me.
You would get, if you get 5, 6, 7, like friend / writer, like comedy writers to help you, 10 minutes material? Come on now.
And what's amazing, he'd had this Taylor Swift joke later in the night where all he said was like, unlike the NFL, we're not going to rely on as many cutaways to Taylor Swift. And then it cut to Taylor Swift and she looked kind of like displeased or just not interested.
Yeah.
And all her fans are like, I can't believe he would be so rude to her. Like her fans are so ready to flip out.
Yeah.
That part of it's like, A, if you're going to make a Taylor Swift joke, they're going to take it the wrong way anyway, so you might as well fucking go for the goddamn gullet.
Yeah.
B, just make sure it's good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a terrible joke. It wasn't even like towards Taylor Swift, it was about the NFL, but he delivered it so poorly.
Yeah, you're like, there's something funnier. There's got to be something funnier in there of like, instead of cutaways to Taylor Swift, we're going to do cutaways to blah, blah, blah. Like, and I don't know, do something different and creative that you can have a callback to later on.
There's nothing more pathetic than I'm in Robert De Niro's here. Like, at one point he said, you're talking to me? And I'm like, shut the fuck up. That is the first thought. If my dad met Robert De Niro, he'd say, you talking to me?
No.
It's not for a monologue host to say.
Yeah.
It's like, I was with my opener this weekend, Liam.
Yeah.
And I've sometimes, we spend time outside the show and we went to a cigar bar and two people within the span of 10 minutes goes, hey, sorry to bother you. How tall are you? And you're like, this is the first thought, and it sucks.
Yeah.
This guy, everyone.
Must know
everyone, they ask him. And then this guy goes, hey, I bet I know his favorite four-letter word, D-U-C-K. And we all have to play along. Duck. Sorry, I should have said it for you. It's my point of just like, a comedian should understand the concept of what a first thought is. Meryl Streep wins all the time.
Yeah.
That's the oldest fucking like, oh man.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And then Jim Gaffigan went up there and he introduced this award, and all he said is like, I never thought I'd be here. You know, I never thought I'd be part of a Hollywood award show because, you know, I was born in Indianapolis. I'm not a pedophile. And it's just like, that's it. It's just a good joke.
Yeah.
man, it sucked.
How did he get picked? To you? I mean, how low on the list do you think he was before they asked him?
I always wonder
if it was 10 days ago, they probably were asking other people for a while.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure people don't get that much notice. And I'm sure these agents and managers are fighting.
Yeah.
I wonder if Mulaney's asked. I wonder if...
Definitely.
I mean, I'm sure Ricky is asked. By the way, Ricky won best stand-up special. Just a nightmare. If you start going to award shows,
You'd start going before me, probably. You'd have to...
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows who will be at
the race is on.
Who knows who will be at the Globes first?
You'll be at the Tonys before me. Are you going to be like, if you get an award, are you going to make one joke? Are you going to be, do you see Will Ferrell and, what a joy.
Yeah, I love them.
They should host.
They should host. Of course. I mean, they always do bits.
But they
must be asked. And they probably are like, no, we will do one bit.
And everyone will love it.
Everyone will love it. And they won't love it as much if we have to do the whole show like this, you know? What were you gonna?
Let me say real quick for our patrons, we hit an exciting milestone.
Yes,
we're now over $1,000 a month. And that's because of you guys. So we're very grateful. We're now only operating at a loss of $3 million per year.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you guys. We are very thankful.
We are
that you guys come up to me after shows. I say, Rob, I'm going to get Russell down here, and I know I'm lying. We are doing a live show in Hollywood,
LA,
and that's very exciting. We got to figure
Holly
out
Hollyweird.
Hollyweird,
right?
We're going to get the most famous pedophile in the world as a guest. So keep telling your friends. We're doing this once a month. We're doing the live episodes here once a month, and I'm sure eventually we'll get two patrons. I'm just trying to get Russell every day. Every day. Just become a full-on radio show.
Yeah.
So stay joined. Tell your friends. Things are going well. So I figured I should share what happened this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Tampa, Side Splitters Comedy Club.
Yeah.
I did a weekend there a long time ago. And every time you visit Florida, you see like... It's not all of Florida that's crazy, but you see like, oh, there's some crazy people in Florida.
Yeah.
And I remember last time I was there, and I made a clip out of it that didn't do well, but someone threw up. And I just got this impression. So in my mind, I'm like, Tampa's a little zany.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get down there Thursday as my first show, sold well enough. And I'm up there about 20, 25 minutes in. I talk to these three women in the front row, and they say they're ICU nurses. Uh-huh. And we do a little crowd work. 1 minute later, I have the recording. 1 minute later, I just notice from the stage, something seems off. Just like two people are standing. Yeah. And they're not like going to the bathroom or anything. So I look over, and eventually I see that someone's lying on the ground.
Uh-huh.
I assume, just based on my last experience, I was like, oh, it's probably just someone drunk, passed out or whatever. And I go, here we go, weekend in Tampa, gonna be chaos. And then very quickly, like, it's clear that they can't seem to wake him up. And I go, you know, I'm the one who makes the move that makes the whole room go, oh, something's wrong. Because I literally had started like a long chunk. I said two lines, and then I'm like, oh, is everything okay? And it's just you feel the wave of the whole audience realizing like something's wrong.
Something's happening.
Something's wrong. So these three ICU nurses go right over, and he's probably my age, probably in his 30s. Doesn't seem like anyone is there with him. Like no one's like, oh my God. Like it just feels like strangers. And these nurses try to wake him up. And like there is, I would say, a solid minute where it does not seem like this guy is waking up. And I'm on stage. There's such a weird feeling of like, I'm just on stage holding a mic.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, oh my God, did this guy... Is he dead?
Yeah.
And there's like 30 seconds of, oh, he's drunk. He'll get up. We'll finish the show. And then there was a feeling of like something's, oh, we're going to call an ambulance. And I'm just standing there. It's so weird because it's like you're just elevated and you're like, do I go sit down? Do I just stay here?
Can I tell you, me?
Yeah.
Once I see those ICU nurses, I think I truthfully would be like, all right, well, we're going to let everyone deal with this and we'll be back as soon as possible. And I would have to leave.
Sure.
Like, I would be so uncomfortable with watching it all or being a part of it.
If you're on the mic right the whole time, you're just like, someone turn the mic off, like, please. Like,
he took drugs, right? He took drugs. Nothing that could happen to me, right? he took weird drugs. I'd just be like, you know, I'm freaking out, you know?
And so I think I was just shocked. I was just like, in my mind, I was like, you know, I hope he's okay. There's nothing I could do at this point.
No,
I'm just standing there. Yeah. I hope he's okay. But in my mind, I was just like, man, I don't even know what's going to happen right now. And eventually someone called 911. They got him awake. And it was like, it was a long time. It felt like a long time. And they kept saying to him, like, don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep. And he was like, I'm sorry. And then the whole audience.
Had he been drunk? Like, what? Like,
no, I don't think so. I think maybe he had a drink.
Yeah.
But they're like, do you think it's a seizure? And he was like, kind of, but he was pretty loopy. They asked him what year it was. Oh, and he said, at some point, I think he said 2024. And the nurse was like, no, it's 2023. And then she was like, it's 2024. Yeah. And he kept going like, I'm sorry. And the whole audience, like very sweetly, the whole audience became sweet. And they were like, it's okay. You don't have to say you're sorry.
Yeah.
And I think at some point, someone in the audience was like, is there a manager? And I was like, oh, we need a manager. And I was like, oh, I have this amplification device in my hand. So I go, manager, please.
Yeah.
I felt like I'm helping.
Yeah.
EMT came. They said, is there a rolly chair? Anyone have a rolly chair? They didn't have a
gurney.
A gurney. And I remembered in the green room, which was essentially just a little office, there was a rolly chair.
Yeah.
And so I go like, oh, cool. I got it.
Yeah.
And I ran into the green room, and there was a moment. Again, he was awake at this point.
Yeah.
There was a moment I'm taking the wheelie chair through the kitchen, just swinging it around, elevating it, where one of the like security people almost tried to like not try to take it off my hands. Like, I'll do it for you. No worries.
Yeah.
And there was a feeling of like, no, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me be good.
Yeah.
And I brought it in. At this point, they were able to get him up. They had to open his shirt. They put him in. It was very strange to watch someone wheel out, like a hospital people wheel someone out in a
rolly chair.
Office chair.
Yeah.
And he left, and suddenly this woman towards the front like started getting really teary, and I was like, oh, are you okay? And she said, I get seizures sometimes too, and I always say I'm sorry, and like, there's no reason to be sorry. And I was like, okay, we don't need any more.
God.
We don't need any more.
Oh my God.
And then it was, the manager came over, like a look like, should we cancel the show? And I was like, no, it's okay. And then went back up, did some jokes. First, you know, lots of thanks to the nurses.
Yeah.
And then made a joke, if I hadn't said they were nurses earlier, that they would have pretended they were plumbers just to have the night off.
Yeah.
And then I had some joke about someone having a medical emergency, and I went back into the show.
Oh, good. How much more time did you have to do?
An hour. I mean, I didn't have to, but, you know.
Yeah.
It felt cool in the sense of, like, first the nurses said, based on their experience, that he would be okay.
Yeah.
Just based on how he was responding.
Yeah.
Though, of course, there's that weird feeling of like...
Oh, like he knows where he is and he knows the year.
But also, like, the hospital's not going to come back and be like, hey, just so you guys know, for your peace of mind...
That stranger died.
Yeah.
Yeah. A hospital representative comes at the end of your show, just so everyone knows before they leave, update. He did die. Yeah.
Well, there's a scene in Hacks, I guess, that my mom was telling me about, where at a taping, someone has a medical emergency... And it's like she's taping her comeback special.
Yeah.
And they roll him out, and the producer comes back and goes, he's alive, everything's okay. And the other producer's like, oh, thank God he's alive. And he's like, no, you idiot, he's fucking dead. You think I'm going to ruin this taping for this shit? And you do have that feeling of, it's like, to the people in that room, that guy is no longer a part of their lives. It's just very weird. You go, I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
But no one in the room is going to make sure of it.
Yeah. I saw someone die at a football game when I was a kid. He had an older man, had a heart attack watching his grandson's championship football game. He threw up and then had a heart attack. And my dad did CPR and stuff on him.
How old were you?
Probably 10.
You were playing or just in the stands?
Just in the stands.
Oh my God. So you're sitting.
Uh-huh.
Does your dad, he's not a doctor.
No, but he was originally a phys ed teacher. So he did all the, and he was a coach for many years. So he had all the CPR and all that training. So,
was he close? Like your dad saw it and was like, I got it.
We were right in front of us.
Wow.
So, and then I was like, I remember later on being like, what happened to that guy? And they're like, oh, he died. And I was like, thinking later, my parents could have lied. Cause I didn't know that man and I was never going to see him again. And it was traumatic. It's when you're like, I remember it. I remember him.
What'd your dad do? CPR?
I remember, I don't remember seeing that part. I remember they must have moved me once that kind of thing happened.
Sure.
But I do remember seeing the guy stand up, throw up, and then fall over. And then that's vivid in my memory. And then I think that my mom must have moved me up the stairs or something. Cause I don't remember the after that part.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I do think it's funny that I asked later that night or the next day. And they were like, he died.
Do you think they should have told you?
No, I'm glad they did. I think it's weird to lie. Cause what if I found out later that
my dad was definitely he would lean towards lying to make me feel better. And mm-hmm. I do think in the overall trajectory, as I came to be, I could have dealt with trauma. I could have microdosed trauma along the way.
I think too, it's hard being with a parent because you're there's so many times you have to decide to lie or not that I think rule of thumb in general is to not because you're you're so many times and it can be fucked up if later on for some reason you find out oh, my parents were lying to me in all these weird different ways. So I understand the kind of rule of thumb just being I'll just tell them the truth because it's...
That's why it's probably important. For me, truly my first loss was putting my dog down mm-hmm. in fifth grade. And it was that's the first time I dealt with death
mm-hmm.
in any kind of real way. And it was I'm not saying it's a good, but it I had to deal with. I mean, if I hadn't had that dog, it would have just been until my grandparent died.
Yeah.
And then I deal with my first death. I'd rather have an animal death be the first death, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was, he seems, so basically later, 2 days later, they had this guy's name because he had at least some check at the bar and the bartender or the manager told me they were able to reach him and he was like, oh yeah, I had a seizure. And he seemed somewhat embarrassed, I guess, over the phone.
Yeah.
But that he was fine.
Great.
But Tova was between this and the sign language interpreter, she's more weird things keep happening at your shows. And I'm like, no, I think it's just more people are there and that increases the chance for
you do lots of shows.
Unusual things.
Yeah. You got to imagine any of those arena shows that people do, something's happening bad at every one of those shows.
And then one day you're that guy at that concert where eight people are crushed to death.
I know.
You don't even know.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, fuck, I got to pay for 8 funerals.
Downside. You're listening to The Downside.
The Downside.
With Gianmarco Cerezi.